Did want to ask about the first year for you. And granted, you haven't been necessarily, operating with lawmakers every single day here, but we are 1 year today now. So if you take a look back at 2025 and your first year as governor, what are you most proud of?
Three things, in no particular order. One, the Bakken West to East pipeline. Two, getting cell phones out of schools K through 12. And three, the property tax relief. And I'll back up then. 30% of the households in North Dakota primary residences will pay zero in property taxes this year. That 30%, that's a huge number. That'll continue to grow over time, and we should be able to get everybody's primary residential property tax to zero sometime in the, next 15 to 20 years, and the vast majority of them quicker than that. Cell phones in schools, it's a game changer. And you're hearing it from everybody all across the state. And it's something we knew anecdotally, and the data supported it. And it is, I was in Fargo North High School today, and one of the teachers is just like, so thank you for that. And then third, getting that natural gas out of Western North Dakota and creating an infrastructure across the whole state to do that is going to allow for a tremendous amount of economic development and access to affordable and reliable power from one end of the state to the other. And I think that that's a game changer for value-added ag. It's a game changer for any economic development. We spend a lot of time talking about workforce and spend a lot of time talking about affordable housing. But for the vast majority of communities in North Dakota, unless you have reliable power and water, you don't have to worry about economic development. So I think those are three big things that we have accomplished with the help of our friends in the legislature, and really proud of that. And then the other one is, I think, kind of the stuff you don't know about until you get here. Response to natural disasters, whether it's tornadoes, straight line winds, government shutdowns, which isn't a natural disaster, but a disaster nonetheless. And we've worked through those things and created some structural programs. Having the bank in North Dakota is obviously helpful, but the response of the team in the governor's office and our emergency responders has been fantastic.
You mentioned the West to East pipeline, and that's something that a lot of our customers, clients on the business side are very excited about. If you could give us an update, please, on that. Where does that stand right now? I know you've helped orchestrate the funding mechanism that can go toward putting that together, and now it's a question of getting everything put together. Where we stand on that one?
Yeah, and WBI is going through the permitting process. They're going to want FERC approval. We appreciate that. I think they'll have really great chats. That will, work a lot faster under the Trump administration than previous administrations. And now it's a matter of getting the route down and getting the landowner buy-in, from across across the whole state. And that's no small task. But they're farther along, I think, than anybody would have thought they could be at this point in time. And I think the demand continues to be there. And, that's the one thing the state did. It's not just a low interest loan. We bought capacity on the line, and hopefully that'll allow them to overbuild the line instead of build it just big enough that allows for that capacity and allows for that economic development. It's going to take a while. Putting a pipe across the state of North Dakota is unfortunately none of this infrastructure gets in the ground as fast as we would like, but WBI has been moving quickly, and they're working on getting that line and that route all lined up so we don't have to, so hopefully we can get it done without any major fights.
Yeah, when you talk about fights, I think about landowners, and we've seen so many eminent domain debates going on in not just here but other states as well. Has any part of this been a conversation where the state says to WBI, hey, you can do this, but the eminent domain thing is not going to be part of what you're doing? How do you kind of navigate those waters?
Well, so first of all, North Dakota has pretty strict eminent domain law to begin with, right? It has to be common carrier. But the problem with linear infrastructure is you don't have to stop it everywhere. You only have to stop it once. I think both the state and WBI's preference would be 100% buy-in. And I think that route, the route they're taking, right, is most of it's already what we call a brown corridor, which means there's already infrastructure in place. So, and this is less controversial, I think. It's a natural gas. It is actually a utility. We're moving a product from the eastern part or western part of the state to the eastern part of the state. And it actually is, you know, in the very rare circumstances that eminent domain comes into the conversation, it actually has to be about a public good. And I, like, I'm hopeful they won't have to use it. And they've chosen the route that way. And so it should always, I mean, eminent domain has to be a part of the conversation for highways, bridges, railroads, but it should be the last resort.
Yeah. When you talk about the challenges of a year here and one of the big lifts that you had wanted to get done with, you talked about that the real estate tax bill or the property tax relief legislation there that ended up getting through. Give us a sense of what you are hearing. What's been the real world impact that has had on residents that we've seen so far? And is there an opportunity to do more like this in the days ahead?
Yes. And yeah, I mean, I'm getting pictures of statements from people saying thank you. And I mean, you'll always hear people say it's not enough. And that's part of the thing. But the beauty of how the law was constructed is it utilizes legacy fund earnings. So as the legacy fund grows, that earning stream will continue to grow. And every time you zero out, like if you zero out 30% of the primary residences in the first year, which we think is going to be pretty close to the number, we're not giving checks to people. So once you get to zero, you're at zero. So if you only use $1,400 of that $1,600 rebate, that extra $200 goes in the pool for everybody else next year. So it'll continue to grow. And I think one of the unique things, particularly in tax policy about this plan, is tax policy is almost always either regressive or progressive. Either give the relief to the people who pay the least and can't afford it the least, or you give it to the people who pay the most. This has the real world impact of giving the most the highest percentage of relief to the people who need it the most the quickest, but over time the people who pay the most will get the most relief. And it's pretty rare in tax policy that you get the best of both of those worlds. And I think it's also important to recognize when everybody talks about this is the only non-income piece of property tax, right? It's not ag income. It's not business income. It's not centrally assessed income. All of those other pieces of property tax, you derive your income from that stuff. This is just simply about the house you live in. And the 3% cap on the local political subs will also be tax relief to all of those other classes of property. Because we've actually seen what happens if you don't do that way. And our friends in Montana have that. They did significant amount of primary residential relief. And what ended up happening is the taxable value on like apartment buildings went through the roof. Mm-hmm. Well, the 3% cap on the property tax budgets disallows that from happening. So you can't make it up on a different class of property just by doing this. And hopefully it will bring, all spending kind of back in control a little bit.
Well, we've seen some of that here. Just last week, we had a local project in Fargo where the school board and the county board said, no, we can't do it. We've got to watch our increases now because of this new law. So we're not going to go ahead and just say rubber stamp on things that used to happen. And while I can argue that there are some places where I think some of these incentives make a lot of sense, I can't blame the people in the county and the school boards.
No, and I mean, I think that is true. And I think that is one of the play. I mean, and we want locals to make those decisions, but we also want locals to, or local political subdivisions to understand that the state pays down essentially 50% of local share of property tax. And if that's the case, we have a say in how fast your budgets grow. Because, and I get it. And doing county government, doing local government is hard. And you always, I mean, you have a finite resource pool, and seems like a never ending set of problems and or ideas. And they're all good ideas.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, constituents want property tax relief, and they don't want it to be swallowed back up in the hole. And that's what has happened before. So we're bullish on how it worked in the first year, and we're excited to see what we can do with it for the next 3 years.
Looking ahead to year number two, I saw WTI price dip down under $57 a barrel today, $56.68. I've got to imagine that means something to budgets and revenues for the state going forward. Concerned at all that we may see a pullback in activity with oil prices as low as they are?
Yeah, I mean, we had 10 frac crews running in November. That doesn't keep up current production. I mean, then there's two different, I mean, there's drilling crews and there's completion crews. And right now we're still seeing, I mean, everybody's getting more efficient. We're starting to see 4 mile laterals, which are significantly more economic. But, you know, this is the other part of that gas pipeline moving from the eastern part or western part of the state to the east, is that's all associated gas. If we can't move the gas, nobody's going to flare it. We don't want them to flare it. So, I mean, it really curtails oil production. But I think everybody's going to have to get we were 20 million under the forecast in November. I mean, we're not talking allotments during the biennium. We're not in that space. But I think the next budget cycle, anybody thinking we're going to have $1.5 billion of surplus when we walk into the legislative session isn't paying attention to the price of oil in the economy right now.
Before I let you go, taking a look ahead to the new year, it's a non-legislative, it's a non-session year, so but certainly a lot of state business will happen. What are your hopes and goals for 2026?
Well, I mean, right now, figuring out how we start right-sizing government under the current economic forecast. I mean, you know, we've had tremendous growth, 20% in 20 years in North Dakota, and government has grown along with it, but that growth is unsustainable. So, I mean, the budgeting process doesn't start a week before the legislature comes in. The budgeting process started for us a couple months ago, and we're already working through to make sure that we can deliver the services North Dakotans have come to expect in a tighter economic environment. And at the end of the day, everything else builds off of that. You want to do more with free through recovery, or you want to deal with any of those issues. And then we'll have a special session to do the rural healthcare stuff from the Trump administration. And that'll happen in the middle of January. And I think we have 4 potential policy changes, and then figure out how we deploy up to $150 million from the federal government and try and figure out how we deliver healthcare better in the rural parts of the state and the country.
Very good, sir. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you and Kirstie and the kids. And we'll look forward to continuing these conversations in the new year.
Everybody stay warm and have a great holiday.
Thanks, Merry Kelly. Christmas.